Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
We've got players changing in Greece. I guess their draft wasn't so good on the financial side. How critical is it that Mr. Varoufakis is in some ways being shown the door?
It's insightful in two ways. One is that the new government is finding it very hard to run an independent course. So even though it has a lot of economic logic on its side, the way in which it approached the negotiation, which was very public, has caused quite a few obstacles. So on the one hand, it shows you that even when you have economic logic on your side, you've got to respect the legacy of the negotiations, and you certainly don't go public in the way that the finance minister did. And you don't take on the biggest creditor in Europe. But the other thing, you know, it doesn't matter who you put there. There is still such fundamental disagreement about the past and the present between Greece and its European partners that it's really hard to see them agree to something meaningful for the future. So it's not an issue of personalities at the end of the day. It's an issue of different interpretation of what's needed. And I don't think that gets resolved by changing the negotiators.
Size of the Greek economy is so small that it doesn't really matter for Europe or Asia's future. So I'm wondering if it matters anymore to you as an investor what happens with Greece, or if it's just an annoying distraction to keep having to put up with the headlines.
It's not an annoying distraction because I think it's interesting to see how this whole thing evolves. You're right. If you look at the economic channels for contagion, Greece is too small. It's not a big enough consumer of other people's products, and it's not a big player in any supply chain around the world. So if something terrible goes on in Greece, even more terrible than what has happened, there will be minimal economic contagion. On the financial side, the risks have come down enormously. This thing has been so well telegraphed that, unfortunately for the European taxpayer, hundreds of millions of liabilities have been shifted from the private sector to the public sector. So the financial contagion going through the markets would be limited. But there's one element, Mike, that no one quite can fully analyze, which are the technical contagion. The Eurozone is not built for the exit of one of its member countries. There's going to be massive renegotiations of contracts. There's going to be lots of legal disputes. There's going to be issues about payments and settlement. That is the one aspect that I think all of us should acknowledge that we simply do not know. We do not know what the technical contagion would be like. We do know that the economic contagion will be minimal, that the financial contagion is containable, but we simply cannot predict the technical contagion. And that's why if there is an accident that results in Greece exiting, you can expect the ECB to be ultra loose through every instrument it has.
Well, it's not like they're not being ultra loose right now, and I'm kind of wondering how you feel about how ECB QE is working. You've got negative interest rates in many countries now, and you got to wonder if that doesn't work against what the ECB is trying to do. You bring down the profitability of European banks. Is lending going to dry up?
Yeah, look, if judged in terms of what it controls, which is asset prices, both on the equity side and the bond side, and also in terms of currencies, then the ECB's QE has done what it's meant to do. It has boosted equity prices. It has boosted bond prices, meaning it's taken yields to ridiculously low levels, negative levels, as you pointed out, and it has weakened the currency. So judged by what it can control, it is successful. Judged by its ultimate objective, which is to promote economic growth, it has had some impact, but that impact is not going to be durable. And it goes back, it's the same issue for the U.S., it's the same issue for Japan. It goes back to the need for a more holistic policy response, which in the case of Europe means structural reforms to promote growth, a better distribution of demand, and getting rid of some of these debt overhangs.
I just sent out on Bloomberg Radio Plus, Mohammed, the German 10-year. It's a semi-log chart showing the percentage change basis, massive plunge in the yield. I need to make some news here. Mr. Gundlach and Mr. Gross look at the Ellerian world of geofinance and what it's done to the German yield curve and the German debt market. Do you agree with Mr. Gundlach and Mr. Gross that it's a trade of the lifetime, price lower, yields higher in Germany?
So when they started talking about this, the 10-year, the Bund was at about 8-9 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had quite a correction already. And they're right. There's a limit to which you can't push yields beyond. You know, this whole notion of buying bonds at negative nominal yields, I understand they can go more negative, but come on, you know, give me a break. So I don't think society is going to accept nominal yields that are going lower, 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 and especially when they start getting deep into negative territory.
Well, let's do this. That's such an important statement that Dr. Ellerian made there, folks. We'll come back and begin with that in our next section. This is the societal decision that animal spirits are required. Mohammed Ellerian, wonderful to see Ben Bernanke yesterday on the streets of New York. He has gained further employment with a small startup company in Newport Beach, California. I mean, it's fascinating what Fed chairman, and we presume Chair Yellen, what they do when they're done. Explain to our audience the value a Ben Bernanke brings to your Allianz or your former PIMCO. What's he bring to the shop? What does he actually do in that acclaimed morning meeting?
So first, this is a combination, the one between PIMCO and Ben Bernanke, that makes a lot of sense for both sides. From the PIMCO perspective, they get to add to their thought leadership at a particularly important time for the global economy and for policies. They get an academic and a policymaker, and they get someone who they've already interacted with because Mr. Bernanke has participated in a few of their secular and cyclical forums. For Mr. Bernanke, it also makes total sense because he advises a firm that takes macro very seriously. It's full of talented people. It has a global footprint. And he gets to observe the interactions between macro and markets. So it's a combination that makes sense from both sides. And it's one that PIMCO is doing ultimately to serve its clients.
A lot of people look at the deal he made with them and with Citadel, and they say, you know, they raise their eyebrows and say, you know, former regulator, former head of the U.S. Central Bank, cashing in now on Wall Street. Do you see anything unseemly or any kind of conflict of interest or problem there?
So I don't see a conflict of interest because as he has said, and as PIMCO has said, and I'm pretty confident it's the case, okay, he's not going to be put in a position where he has to lobby for PIMCO. So I don't see any conflict of interest there. There's a broader issue you raise, Mike, and that's an issue for society to address, which is what is the right interactions for people coming out of government. And Mr. Bernanke has defined it as, I will not work for any firm that the Fed was or is regulating. And that's a condition he set, which is actually tougher than the condition that society sets right now. So he has set his own condition, and his advising Citadel and PIMCO is consistent with that condition.
I'll go back to what we were talking about just before the break and ask, you were just starting to talk about the downside if we don't get out of new normal, the financial instability that might result. I want to ask you to expand on that a little bit and then tell us how one should prepare.
So the simple hypothesis is that asset prices have been boosted by central bank policies and by the deployment of cash on corporate balance sheets to levels that are way ahead of fundamentals, and they will need to be validated at some point by improving fundamentals. If they are not validated, then not only will they converge back towards the lower fundamentals, but they will most likely overshoot it because there is now general agreement that market liquidity is an issue. Markets are in love with this illusion of liquidity. They believe that they can reposition themselves easily if the paradigm changes. But reality is they cannot. Reality is that the broker-dealers have been shrunk, and there isn't the counter-cyclical risk absorption capacity in the system. So if asset prices move back down towards fundamentals, they will overshoot the fundamentals, and you get both financial instability and sluggish fundamentals. My reaction to that is you need three things in your portfolio. You need resilience, you need optionality, and you need agility. And for that reason, I think a more barbelled approach makes sense, which means take some money out of the public markets that have been boosted to very high artificial levels, move some of it back in cash, and move some of it into higher risk and less trafficked areas. So become more barbelled and maintain both the resilience that cash gives you and the optionality that cash gives you with the agility of some of these other less trafficked opportunities.
Mohammed, a changing of the guard in Saudi Arabia, they have a close alliance with the new Egypt. Explain to me how your Egypt and how Mr. El-Sisi needs to adapt to a new younger royalty in Saudi Arabia.
I think they're adapting pretty well. I mean, you could see how they both came together in terms of responding to what was going on in Yemen. I think more generally, Egypt needs to continue to rebuild its economy, needs to continue to improve the investment environment so that Egypt creates jobs for its youth. And that is what's absolutely key to Egypt. I think adapting to a Saudi Arabia that's actually skipping a generation. That's what Saudi Arabia is doing. It's skipping a generation in terms of succession. Will come easy. The hard thing for Egypt is to continue what it needs to do at home.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 119.